Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. It is Free Advice Fridays, which is the day that I take your calls and answer your questions about your narcissistic abuse issues. Sometimes I get letters ahead of time that I read on the air and answer questions. Sometimes people call in. As of this moment, no one has called in or sent a letter, but I do have some great information to share with you. If you would like to call in, the number is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. If you would like to call in and talk to me, I would be happy to answer your questions. Some news. I finished the manuscript of my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, The Narcissist Abuse Survivor's Guide to Healing. I wrote this book for all of you, with all of you in mind, and it has the up-to-the-minute facts, information, and studies. So there's not another book out there. This book is going to be a guide for you to understand what's happened to you and to understand how to heal from it. It's getting great reviews from those who are previewing it. So I just want to let you know that that's on its way. I don't know when it will be published, but it is finished. The manuscript is finished, and I am so glad. The other thing I want to talk to you about is the Facebook page. Where's my thing? Oh, okay. Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United. The page is growing very slowly. Some of you are joining it, but I really don't have the support I would like to have. So please go to Facebook to Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United and join, or whatever they say, follow, or however you're supposed to do that. But just become a member of that page so that we can get that going. Today I want to talk to you about the different ways that the narcissist abuse. We're people who are empathetic, and we have the ability to put As empathetic people, we have the ability to put ourselves in the shoes of others. We can't possibly grasp the mindset of the narcissist. So when we look at them, our eyes deceive us. These are people who look and act as we do in every other way. So that makes us assume that they feel emotions the way that we do. But no matter what the nature of the relationship we have with our narcissist is, we are only a means to an end for them. If being nice to them gets them what they want, they'll be nice. But they're not nice, and they're not patient people. They could be pleasant, but that's the harder route to their destination, so they can only keep it up for so long. Now, we know that narcissists are innovative and resourceful in their abuse, in the way that they craft everything that they do. And some of the tactics that they use are more easily recognized than others. Each one is just as destructive, but there are several ways. You know, we wonder what has happened to us. And this, what's called stealth abuse. This stealth abuse catches us off guard, so we really don't know that we're being abused. It may not feel great, and something inside of us may send up a red flag, but we really don't know where to apply that red flag. We're not sure. There's a lot of talk online about triangulation and gaslighting. So I'm not going to go over that right now. If you guys have any questions about that, you can always send them to me and I'll address them in the next show. But I'm going to talk about some other lesser known types of abuse. And because stealth abuse is unseen and it leaves no physical marks, it's also very hard for outsiders to recognize them. And so it's easier for them to trivialize it. So the first one I'm going to talk about is called abuse by proxy. This is an indirect method of abuse that it's a roundabout way of abusing, where the abuser doesn't do the abusing himself, but he recruits unwitting people to do it for him. So to carry this out, the narcissist manipulates other people, and he gets them to side with him against the targets that he's trying to hurt, and he cons them into doing his dirty work. And this is especially easy for people who are in positions of authority or have respect in the community. Parents, doctors, politicians, police officers, lawyers, wealthy and famous people. They tend to be the most influential recruits. And so the narcissist gathers together a small army of previously disinterested parties, and they're known as flying monkeys. You've probably heard about flying monkeys, and I'm going to explain what that is. I just think that's the cutest expression, but it's not really cute what they do. So they gather all these people, and the people aren't gathered as an army in the sense that they know each other. There's just a lot of people spread out that are there to do the abuse for the narcissist. So they'll recruit friends, family members, neighbors, people in your community, people you work with, colleagues, and even law enforcement. I've even had people tell me that law enforcement is on the side of their parent. And so there's nothing that they can do. And a lot of times, these people are psychologists and counselors, which is very scary. But they put watchful eyes everywhere in the community. And this gives the victim no avenues of escape. And this is so scary. And when I talk to people who are experiencing abuse by proxy, they are panic-stricken because there's nothing they can do. There's no move that they can make to get out of this type of abuse. And it's very, very traumatic for them. So that's abuse by proxy. Now, I'm going to talk about, I said I would talk about flying monkeys, and so let's talk about that. It's really kind of funny how so many terms from The Wizard of Oz has been applied, narcissistic personality disorder. And if you remember the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz, they're the ones that the Wicked Witch sends flying out the window of the castle to go capture Dorothy. She gives them the orders of what she wants to do, the abuse she wants to hand down, and they go and they do it for her. Now, flying monkeys, as in the case of The Wizard of Oz, they don't have a mind of their own, so they just do whatever they're told to do. Well, it's very similar for the flying monkeys that are recruited by narcissists. Somehow, they are vulnerable, and they buy into the narcissist's lies, and then, like robots, they do his dirty work for him. And by getting others to harass his victims, the narcissist's hands stay clean. And you can never never accuse him. He's unimpeachable. So, and the way narcissists find these people, these flying monkeys, is they can smell vulnerability on others. So people that are that tend to be very highly empathetic or passive, naive, and are willing to buy into the lies that are told to them by the narcissist are also are very vulnerable to becoming flying monkeys. The other people they recruit are bullies who just enjoy stirring up trouble. So flying monkeys can either be, you know, naive, passive people who just buy into this, who really don't have the skills to understand what the narcissist is about. Excuse me. And then the other group of people is the bullies who like doing this kind of stuff and don't mind going out. And, you know, they're angry people. So this is a way for them to express their anger. So the flying monkey's goal is to further the narcissist's agenda. And they do it because they're so appalled by the cruel and unfair treatment they believe the narcissist has been subjected to. So they see the narcissist as the abused and the abused as the abuser. It's very confusing, but that's how it goes. And so because they're so appalled at what is being done to the narcissist according to what the narcissist tells them, they willingly go out and fight their battles for them. Now, these are people that are going to believe what's told to them without proof or question. And they innocently wage war on people who have nothing to do with this. They are the abused. So, you know, and they also do detective work. The narcissists send these people out, these flying monkeys out, to spy on people and then report back to them with what they learned. And, you know, a lot of times they even do this through social networking, like through Facebook. They may use another name. They may befriend the target and then listen and watch everything that they say, everything they talk about. But they'll also be out in the open watching for them. So that's kind of scary. And if you do recognize that somebody is a flying monkey, there's little chance that you can reason with them because they're either blind to the truth, they may have personality disorders themselves, or they're just simply too weak to stand up to the narcissist. And in other cases, they may even side with the narcissist because they're afraid if they don't, they're going to be targeted. So they'd rather hurt you than be hurt themselves. There are rare occasions where flying monkeys will snap out of the spell they're under and stop doing what the narcissist asks them to do, but that usually doesn't happen. So if you know that you are being targeted by flying monkeys, the only thing that you can do is to avoid contact with them. Be very diligent in cutting them off. Don't talk to them. Don't take their texts or emails. Don't befriend them. If you see something weird on your Facebook page, shut it down because they're watching you. And we don't want to give the narcissist any more information than he already has. And believe me, he really, really has. So these people may seem as if they have your best interests at heart, but they're not. And as badly as you want validation and compassion for what you're experiencing, you cannot blindly trust anyone. Now, the next one I'm going to talk about is hoovering. You know that frustrating experience that you have? You've done this more than once, and you felt idiotic every time. You finally get away from the narcissist, and then he sucks you back in. Thus the term hoovering, which the actual definition of hoovering is vacuuming. And it, in more recent years, it's become a slang term that's used to describe the sucking back in maneuver narcissists use with their victims. So people that have finally escaped, finally gotten together the nerve to get away, or have gone no contact. The narcissist will suck them back in over and over. And people, then we beat ourselves up and we say, how could we have been so stupid to keep going back and back and back and back? Well, I'll explain to you the tactics that they use to do this so that when it happens to you, you'll understand. One of the most commonly used tactics that they do is all of a sudden they act kind and considerate, and they want to convince you that they've changed. And because you want them to change so badly, you want to believe this, because to not believe it means your whole life is going to have to be topsy-turvy. You are up against a major challenge in your life, and it's very frightening. So as soon as the narcissist becomes the person that you wish they would be, you're right back there. It's just too easy. But there's other things that they do. One thing is they may threaten self-harm or suicide. If you've broken up from a narcissist or left them, and they're like, if you don't come back, I'm killing myself, or I'm going to hurt myself, or I'm going to hurt somebody else. These are just hoovering tactics to get you to come back to them. And you can address those tactics by saying, okay, well, I'm going to call the authorities. I'm going to call the police. If you're going to harm yourself, I'm calling 911. And actually call them on it and do something about it so that they will not idly threaten you. Another one that they do is they tell you that they're sick or they're in pain or they're dying or they're in the hospital and you feel sorry for them. Okay, you know, this is somebody that was in my life. Now, you know, they really are sick and they need me. They may be in these places, they may be sick, but they may not be as bad as you think they are. But even so, that should not be a reason to take them back in your life. So beware of that. Sometimes they'll request information from you that they need that only you would know. Like, you know, do you have Aunt Grace's phone number? Because I need to talk to her about her son so-and-so, and I don't have her phone number. So they use excuses to get you to give them information, because any contact with them gives them that opportunity to suck you back in, to hoover you. Have you ever had your narcissist on the outside tell people how sorry they are for what they did to you, yet they've never said it to you? Well, if they're telling other people how sorry they are, but they've never expressed it to you, and they've certainly had ample opportunity to do so, do not fall for it. Do not fall for it. They may tell you that someone needs your help. They may say, you know, my friend so-and-so is really in a bad way, and you have this skill, and you could really, really help him out at this point. Don't fall for it. Another thing they do is they may accidentally send like a text to you that's really meant for someone else, but they know that they're sending it to you, and it has provocative information. And you look at this and you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is the thing they're talking to about other people. They're finding other women or other men, or they're doing this or they're doing that. And now they accidentally sent it to you and you see it. But that's not what's happening. They have deliberately sent it to you, so you think they're doing these things. Narcissists are very, very smart, and they're very manipulative. And so I really want you to be aware of these kind of things. Let's see. Another one is, suddenly trying to return things that you left behind. You may have been away from the narcissist for a year. You may have told them for the first couple months, come and get your things, come and get your things, come and get your things. They never got your things, their things. Now, all of a sudden, they want their things. Don't fall for it. They may call you because they want to inform you of something, like so-and-so is getting married, or they had a, somebody had a baby, or I just wanted to tell you that, you know, something that you might like to know. And they, you know, I'm not trying to intrude on your life. I just want, thought you might like to know that so-and-so had a baby, or, you know, Bob and Marion are getting married, and you might like to know that. That's all I want to tell you. But it's hoovering, and don't buy into it. They may claim, they may text you back saying, oh, I got a text, or they may email you back and say, oh, I got an email or a text from you. And it's something you never actually sent, but they're using that as an excuse. They're saying, oh, I got this from you. Did you have something to ask me? Let's see what else they do. They may try to pass on a message from someone. Say, so-and-so told me to tell you about this. But really, it's a lie. There is no actual claim. There's nothing really going on. They're making it all up. And one of the most maddening things is when they develop and maintain relationships with people who are close to you. So all of a sudden, they might have hated your, you might have been married to this guy or woman. You might have hated your in-laws. Now all of a sudden, you're their best friend. And you've got them working against you, and they are recruiting you back. They're trying to get you back. They're hoovering you back. So these are some of the things to look out for with hoovering. And as long as hoovering feeds their egos and fulfills their needs, you've got to be very strong and not respond to it, because any response, whether it is negative or positive, will perpetuate the harassment. You give them a little teeny bit, anything. If you've already separated from them and you give them a little teeny in, they're going to take it, and it's going to get wider and wider, and before you know it, they're going to be back in your life. So remember these things. Try to remember these things. Maybe you want to listen to the show again and maybe write some of these things down. This will also be in my book, as is everything that I speak about. The other tactic, or I should say another tactic that they use, is one called stonewalling. Now, conflict is always uncomfortable when it happens in close relationships. And we've all walked away from conflicts to avoid discussing something, or to avoid fighting, or to avoid having to talk about our feelings. And so when we use this as a temporary strategy, as a way to cool ourselves down, these are very beneficial to a relationship. If you're having an argument and you know you're going to say something you regret, it's best to take a breather. And if you're the person who you're arguing with wants to take a breather, let them take a breather. It's really an important strategy in fighting among couples. But when someone deliberately uses these tactics to avoid issues or to shut someone out or to control someone, that's highly destructive. If every time you want to talk about something, they walk away, or they shut you out, or they, whatever they do to try to keep you from saying it, whether they say, why do you keep rehashing this? You know, they just are basically using terms to shut you out so you cannot say your piece. So this is stonewalling. And it's the easiest thing for them to do, because it takes no effort on their part. But it is so effective in creating frustration, desperation, humiliation, and infuriation in victims. So some of the things that they do to shut down communication would be, when you're trying to discuss an issue, they walk away without any explanation. They just walk out of the room, leaving you standing there. If there's something you need to collaborate on, and you're trying to get them to talk about something, to collaborate, they will refuse to discuss or do it. And they know it's important to you. You know, you could say, look, our anniversary's coming up, and I really want to try to plan something I really want to go away. And they'll refuse to discuss it. They just won't go there. Sometimes they will take a problem and draw it out longer than necessary so that you cannot get a satisfactory answer or resolution or even find an alternative solution. So they stretch it out so long that the window of opportunity goes, and they know they're doing this. You know, say you want to buy tickets to a concert or something like that. They'll stretch it out and stretch it out to the point where they know you can no longer even buy those tickets. What else do they do? They'll pretend to listen to you and not offer a response. How crazy does that make you feel when you're talking to someone who's looking at you and not offering you anything? Sometimes they'll yawn or they act tired or bored or uninterested in what you have to say. So, you know, they make it very obvious that they don't want to hear what you have to say. Sometimes they just fall asleep. And so really what they're doing is they don't want to come to any kind of solution to your concerns. And they'll blame you and they'll say, you know, why do you keep talking about the same thing over and over and over again? Enough already. You've said it. But though you've said it, they've never given you any answers. So that's really, really frustrating. Again, this is Free Advice Friday with Randy Fine. And if you'd like to call in, the number is 424-220-1801. Right now I'm talking about tactics that we don't hear a lot about that are used by the narcissist to abuse. Okay. The other one is, you know, narcissists like to see you squirm. They find that entertaining. So they enjoy humiliating you. Anybody who has ever had any kind of relationship with a narcissist and broken away from them will eventually become a smear campaign victim. The narcissist does this to save face because you've pulled away, and they take great offense to this because it's a way of criticizing them. It's a way of saying they've done something wrong, they're not good enough, and so they're going to get back at you. They have to be since they feed off the validation and admiration that they get from the unsuspecting public, they have to be very careful with what image they portray. And so they're going to protect that image at all costs, and that often means throwing you, the victim, under the bus. So if somebody has to look bad, it's not going to be the narcissist, which is why if you try to confront them, or ask for an apology or whatever, the more you defend your position or the more you try to stand up to them, the more they're going to turn against you. So if they're arguing with you and you try to defend yourself or you make accusations back and say, that's not me, that's you, you will be portrayed as the unstable one. And again, the abuser will accuse you of being his abuser. So the more you try to defend yourself, the worse he will make you look. So there's no way to redeem yourself with a narcissist who is bent on ruining you. And they are all bent on ruining you if you leave them, or you stand up to them, or you create boundaries with them. They're going to make you look bad. That's what they do. There's just no way to beat the narcissist at the games that he plays. So if you are the target of a smear campaign, the only thing you can completely eliminate from your life is the narcissist and his flying monkeys, because if you talk to any of them, they are going to continue the abuse with you. So it's really hard to be silent when these kind of things are happening to you. And in the book, I talk about rebuilding the inner experience, and I'll explain a little bit about that to you. as victims of narcissistic abuse or any kind of abuse, it is very likely to have started in childhood in some way. Maybe you don't think you were narcissistically abused in childhood, but something in your childhood set you up to become a victim of a narcissist. And what happens, the reason that you're so vulnerable to these people is that you have not developed your insides at all. And what I mean by that is, in a normal family with normal parents that love their children properly, unconditionally, they look forward to their children growing and changing. So as they go through the stages of individuation, from 2 to 3, 3 to 4, all these little teeny steps that they take on the way to adulthood, they try to stifle those stages. They don't allow the child to become an individual. So by the time you get to be an adult, you have not gone through any of these stages that have allowed you, that have taken you to the place you should be. I'm a parent. I mean, I loved watching my children become independent. I loved each little thing that they did to become their own person, and I encouraged it. But narcissistic parents don't do that. They don't encourage the growth of their children. So many of us reach adulthood, and we don't feel like adults. We still feel like children. We still feel like we are enmeshed in our childhood for some reason with a parent, or in some way enmeshed or stuck in that stage. Well, that just goes to figure, because if you've never been allowed to grow properly, it's like taking a plant and putting a bag over it. It's not going to grow. It's just not going to grow. So you've been snuffed out. Your light has been, well, they can't really snuff out your light, but they can try. The other thing is the inner experience that parents bring to their children of self-love and boundaries and validation is something that narcissistic abuse victims lack. Again, with parents who are loving, they teach their children self-love and self-respect. They help them build the inner experience of not needing to be validated by everybody in the world, but to learn to validate themselves, self-validation. They teach them boundaries in life. They teach them that when something doesn't feel right, it's not right. But they also teach them boundaries between them and their children. What they do is they don't interfere in their children's lives. Look, parents are going to guide you and they're going to get involved in the things that you do. But interference and hovering and those kind of things, being so enmeshed in your life that they're to the point of control, that deprives you of the opportunity to grow this way as a person. So you learn external validation is the only way to get it. And when people call me for counseling, and thank you to all of you who have actually called, and I've been getting a lot of counseling clients, so thank you so much. People are so confused, and they question everything they ask me. They'll tell me something and they'll say, is that confusing or does that make sense? Because they've never learned to validate from within. Every bit of validation has to come from the outside. They're never sure that what they're saying or thinking or doing is the right thing to say or think or do, because they haven't been taught that. So when you get to the point of adulthood and you don't have, you're an empty vessel, you have no inner experience to carry you through life. And that's what I work with people, and all of this is in the book, and I tell you how to do all these things, how to create these things for yourself. First, how to understand what happened to you, and then how to create these things within yourself. But that's the first thing that has to be worked on. Because if you don't have self-love and you don't have the ability to validate the decisions that you make, then you become very vulnerable to other people who are controllers. And that's what happens. And so even if you're in a bad relationship as an adult, if you get out of that relationship, if you walk away, you could go from here to China. But if you don't rebuild or build your inner self, you are going to experience this over and over and over again because you cannot do these things for yourself. So healing from narcissistic abuse is about creating the inner experience of feeling good about yourself, loving yourself, treating yourself well, believing in yourself, and validating yourself. And that's what I work with my clients, my counseling clients on, is doing these things so that, because I can't hold their hand forever. I can only make them understand what they went through. I can validate the experience, which is something that narcissistic victims, abuse victims, never get validation. They don't get validation from the perpetrator. They don't get validation from their friends or their families or their neighbors. Nobody believes them. I believe them. And I listen to the story. And I could tell if they've been the target of a narcissist. And you know what? Every single time they have been. Because there's things that I look for that are very specific to narcissistic abuse. And I can tell if a person has had that experience and if the person there that has been abusing them is a narcissist. And I don't think I've ever had anybody call me that wasn't dealing with a narcissist. Generally, they are, because the feelings that you get as a result, the residual effect, is so painful that it's generally has to do with a narcissist. But after I validate people, validate their experience, and assure them that this is what they are dealing with, and that it's really the narcissist and not them that's the problem. And that takes so much reinforcement over and over and over and over again, because the mind keeps going back to, I must have done something wrong. How could a person treat me this way if I've done nothing wrong? It's not logical to us. We can't look at these people and think of them in any other way than we can think, which is logic. So we're generally people who want to take, you know, we want to assume responsibility for the things that we do. So we have to, obviously we have to have done something, but guess what? You haven't. And whatever you've done that the narcissist is accusing you of, you're only doing because they're abusing you. It's a reaction to the abuse. Have you ever had a narcissist get you to the point where you are enraged or you're screaming or you're crying or whatever? They get you to the point where you're ready to just have a nervous breakdown. And then they very calmly look at you and say, see? See how emotional you are? See how oversensitive you are? Or, you're the problem, I'm not the problem. They push you to that point. So some of these things that I talked about today, these are things to look out for. And I guarantee that you have experienced at least some of these things, if not a great majority of them, because narcissists, you know, you'd think they were all made in the same factory. They all do the same thing. They all have the same tactics. They all say the same things. It's really incredible. And as a professional who works with people like this, it never fails to amaze me. Because people tell me their stories, and they say, I know that's crazy and doesn't make any sense. And I say, you know what? It does. It makes perfect sense. The stories are always unique to the situation, but the tactics are all the same. So if you are experiencing this kind of abuse and you're struggling with it in any way and you want to rebuild that inner self so that you don't fall prey to this over and over, I urge you to get some help, and I am always there for you. I do my counseling over the phone, so you can call me pretty much at any time. Well, you don't call. You actually schedule an appointment. I'll get back to you, and we can talk. And if you're in a crisis, I'm usually available to talk to you. So to do that, go to my website, randygfine.com, randigfine.com, and then go to the page that says Fine Life Issues Counseling. And on that page is all my policies. There's some videos about different topics that I work with. And there's also a link to for you to make an appointment. And I urge you to reach out because I can help you. I know I can help you. I have lived this. I am a narcissistic abuse survivor. I have lived this. I know what you are experiencing, and I know how to help you get through it. If you would like to email me, and you can email me with your questions, and you can email me if you want them to appear on the show, but however, whatever you want to talk to me about, email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. loveyourlife@randygfine.com. And once again, check out the Facebook page, Narcissistic Abuse Survivors United. Check it out and just click on like so we can build up this page. All my shows that you listen to, and thank you very much because I'm way over 150,000 now listens, all my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. So I want to thank you again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine, also author and life issues counselor specializing in narcissistic abuse. Signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. Be